up late again watching TV with my best friend. Laughing at
the balmy 68
night show. I don't know what's wrong with me, cause I know I need my rest. But if I don't stay up all night and sleep all day, I ain't at my best. Yes, we are.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Monday. If you still want to try to get in, text line 251-343-0106. Time permitting, we will respond. Joining us now, he has always been kind to this program. Even when I was like just kind of like learning radio up in Huntsville, Alabama, he would come on my show. But State Senator Larry Stutz joins us on the line. Senator, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Thank you for having me on your show again today.
Hey, thanks for coming on. We always appreciate your time. I know you're busy and you don't get many days off heading into this session, but here we are. It is the 2025 legislative session. What's your sense of things? What's the mood up there or the mood down there, I guess, from your perspective for Montgomery for this year?
Well, it seems a lot more congenial than last year. You know, we've just gotten started, so we only have 3 days behind us and 27 more to go, but at least the way the session started, it seemed like everybody is in a congenial mood to work together. And we, of course, have a new pro tem in the Senate. And, you know, so it's going to take a few days to see how all the leadership changes fall in place. But I'm very optimistic that it's going to go very well and think that Senator Gudger is going to do a very good job as pro tem.
Yeah, you know, and folks sort of think it's going to be a lot of the kind of, you know, not to expect any too big a change, is not too disruptive, but maybe trying to keep the ship within the lines, or the vehicle within the constraints, and maybe not letting things get too out of hand. They just sometimes you can let your Democrat colleagues sort of really, really control the floor over the years. But I don't get the sense that's going to be much of a problem this year.
I don't think so either. I think that we will probably be more aggressive about controlling the agenda maybe than we have been in the past.
Yeah, let's hope so. I can't sit through many more of these filibusters. But, hey, yeah, that's just the nature of the Alabama Senate. You know, and let's kick it off here. I wanted to make sure to get you on, talk about some of your legislative priorities. I think they're important to discuss. The age of medical consent, and this has been one a lot of people talked about, just that Alabama, I guess, doesn't really have a clear definition of that. And kind of walk us through what you want to do with the consent item.
Well, you're right. There are some confusing issues with current Alabama law. But one of the real problems with the current Alabama law is the age of medical consent is 14. And that is the lowest in the country. And since I have filed the bill, I have heard from several different people around the state who said, you know, what a problem that presented for their family, that their 15-year-old child got referred for counseling and they had no access to the records. They could not, you know, really participate in their child's care. And that was a real problem. And I fundamentally believe that, these issues with your children are parents' choice, and parents are ultimately responsible for their children. And, you know, if you are living in your parents' house and depending on your parents for support and all of those things, then your parents have a right to be involved in those decisions. And a school counselor should not be able to refer you for counseling and then your parents have no role in what direction the counseling goes or even what's being done in the counseling. And, you know, we've got exceptions in the bill. If you're living independently, if you're married or divorced or pregnant or if you have a baby, you know, then you certainly are an emancipated minor and you can make those decisions. But otherwise, you know, your parents should have a role in that decision making.
Do you find this to be a problem, or is it one of these things you see it happening in other places? And rather than, like, you know, you're learning from other people's mistakes, sort of like a preventative measure, or is this something like did we find from time to time is an issue in Alabama?
Well, it's an issue that's been out there, but, you know, quite honestly, some of the pandemic issues kind of brought it to the forefront, and some of the transgender issues brought it to the forefront. But the fact is, most states, the age of medical consent is either 18 or 19. There are some states that have 16. But again, Alabama, as pro-family as we say that we are, our medical consent is 14. It's the lowest in the entire United States. And if we want to involve parents more in their children's lives, that's something that we need to fix. And I fully recognize that all parents aren't perfect parents. But, you know, I was not a perfect parent. But regardless, you still have that responsibility. And to exclude you being involved in that decision making with your child is still, to me, fundamentally wrong.
Joined by State Senator Larry Stutz here on the program. Yeah, and do you anticipate any? I mean, this seems like the way you've presented it to us, it seems like a layup. But I mean, where do you see this tracking over the session?
Well, I think it's going to move forward very quickly. And, of course, Representative Susan DuBose has the identical bill in the House, and she had been out of town, and so mine ended up being filed first. But she has an identical bill in the House, and she has done a tremendous amount of work on it and has done a great job with it. And whether we move the Senate bill or the House bill, you know, which one moves through the process more quickly is immaterial to me. I just want to see it done. So I don't see how there's going to be a lot of opposition. Now, you know, I've participated in a couple of different conference calls with people that some people that had objection to it. And, in one of the calls that I was on, there was a child psychiatrist on the call. There were about a dozen doctors on the call. And one of the child psychiatrists said, well, we can't have parents interfering with treatment. And to me, that shows your true colors, that you're wanting to exclude the parents from the decision making. And to me, I mean, that's just unacceptable to me. And like I said, we're not doing anything radical by raising the age to 18. We're just getting in line with what just about every other state has. And like I said, there's a few that have 16, but most states are either 18 or 19.
Well,
and we have real reasonable exceptions. Like I said, the issues with pregnancy, and of course, you know, all of your listeners may not know that I'm an OBGYN doctor and have recently retired, but practiced OBGYN for 32 years. And so I have dealt with a ton of teenage pregnancies and have dealt with these issues head on for many years. So it's not something that I don't understand the implications of needing some exceptions, but not for routine care.
Right. Let's wade into something that's it's confusing to me. I kind of understand what's going on here, but I don't know the nuance. But these pharmacy benefits managers, there's a bunch of bills that have been filed regarding what their PBMs. You got one of these bills. Kind of lay out the issue for us and what you propose here.
Okay, well, I appreciate you asking about that, Jeff. That is a major piece of legislation. The independent pharmacists across the state are really struggling. And the fact is, I look at these things simply, and the PBMs don't really bring anything to the system. You know, there are only so many healthcare dollars that are split up between pharmacists, doctors, hospitals, nursing homes, whatever. And the PBMs are an unnecessary middleman that does not save anybody any money. You know, if you look back several years, I think around 2007 or so, the PBM started vertically integrating their system where they own pharmacies. So the fact is, the pharmacies that they own are competing with independent pharmacies. And the PBM gets to set the price for all of the pharmacies within their network. And they set the prices for independent pharmacies below what the acquisition costs are on many of their claims. I've had a pharmacist tell me that they lose money on about half of the prescriptions that they fill. And so we're simply trying to remedy that situation to, you might say, level the playing field, because independent pharmacies, particularly when you look at rural Alabama, they're a vital part of the healthcare system in small towns, in rural areas, and they offer services that mail order pharmacies don't offer. You know, if you get a prescription for a sick child on Friday afternoon and you have to use a mail order prescription or a mail order prescription service, you know, you're not going to get the medicine till Tuesday or Wednesday of the next week. And your local pharmacy would fill it then. They would open up on Saturday. There are a lot of independent pharmacists that, you know, will meet a client at the store after hours to fill a prescription. And if you drive everything to mail order pharmacies, you totally take that possibility out of the equation. But the bottom line is that we're not asking for the moon. We're just asking to level the playing field and make it be fair. And, you know, there's plenty of data that they pay more to their own pharmacies within their vertically integrated network than they do to independent pharmacies. And it doesn't save the consumer any money. Like I said, they're reaping huge profits out of the system, and all they're doing is steering the people to an out-of-town pharmacy or to a mail-order pharmacy or to one of their own pharmacies by paying those pharmacies more than they pay the others, because they get to set the prices within the network. And the two things that are important, and I know we don't have much time, but the thing that's unique about the bill, Senate Bill 99, the bill that I have, is it mandates that the rebate goes to the customer, not the PBM. And one of the things that drives up the cost of medication is when they don't allow a generic equivalent to be used, because the PBM gets a rebate from the manufacturer to require that the name brand medication be the one that's on their formulary. So if you're having a prescription filled, they can mandate that your generic equivalent is not on the formulary, so you have to pay the higher price. The consumer has to pay the higher price for that drug, and then the PBM in return gets a rebate from the company that makes the name brand drug. And, I mean, they called it a rebate. I would call it a kickback. But regardless, we, in this bill, require that the rebate goes back to the customer. And that could be the person that's having the prescription filled, or at least it would go back to their insurance plan at the company that they work for, which would help keep their premiums down. So the idea that this is going to drive up costs is absolutely not true. It's going to drive down costs, because the rebate is going to go back to the person that's paying the money and not to the PBM. And then the second thing that's unique about my bill is it has enforcement provisions that allows the Department of Insurance, it specifically says that the Department of Insurance has explicit authority to enforce the provisions of this act. So right now, you know, there are a lot of ways to get around it. And so we have an enforcement provision, and we require that the rebate go directly back to the consumer and not to the middleman.
Well, it's going to be kind of fascinating to watch, Senator. This seems to be the year that there's a lot of attention on this issue, and I guess they saw it coming, because I think these big sort of PBM or corporate entities really are gearing up for a fight on this.
Yeah, I think so. I think there will be. But like I said, if you look at what is going to help the average person, that's going to help independent pharmacists across the state, and it's going to save the consumer money in the end. And clearly it's something that needs to be accomplished. And I think Senate Bill 99 is the bill that will do it. And there are a group of over 100 independent pharmacists across the state and that helped draft this bill and looked at all of it. And you're right, it's a complex issue. I mean, I've practiced medicine for 32 years, but I didn't really understand exactly how the PBMs work until I started digging into this and realizing this is something that really needs to be fixed.
Senator, we got to wrap it up there, but you're always very, like I said, you've always been very kind to this program, and we'll, hopefully we can catch up next week, or this week, I should say, up in Montgomery.
Yeah, well, I'll be headed down to Montgomery early tomorrow morning, so I look forward to seeing you, Jeff, and thank you again for having me on your show.
Hey, thanks for coming on, and stay safe. That was State Senator Larry Stutz there. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Good night, angel. Sleep tight, darling.